Hello, and welcome to the Comic Book Page Weekly Spotlight. My name is John Mayo, and I'll be your host.
And I'm Bob Breton. In this episode, we'll be spotlighting three comics that came out in shops last week, but that John and I got from DCBS this week. One from DC, one from Marvel, and one from some other publisher. As always, we'll keep major spoilers to a minimum, but we'll discuss general plot points and storylines of the comics we review.
Comics we're going to be talking about in this episode came out on Friday, December 28th, 2007. This was the last shipment for the year, and that's why it came out on a Friday, because Christmas messed up the shipping, yada yada yada. I didn't wind up getting this until the following Wednesday, the 2nd, by which point, you know, holidays were over and kind of cut into my reading time. And my God, this is the biggest shipping week of comics I have had since I started going through DCBS.
Yeah, it seems like they were pushing stuff out to get it all out by the end of the year or something. I don't know what the deal was. I got 47 comic books.
I got 51, and it's like, those are, I mean, both the 47 and the 51, that's insane. And I think a lot of it is, end of month is not uncommon for a publisher to just move stuff out to hopefully avoid it being considered late and things like that. But, you know, there's no such penalty at the end of the year or whatever. And I think a lot of it's stuff they'd maybe hoped to have out for Christmas but didn't quite make. I don't know.
But the last week wasn't small by any means. I mean,
none of the last few have been small.
Yeah.
You know, it's been just a lot of fairly big weeks recently.
Yep.
So, I mean, I got all manner of stuff. In addition to those comics, I got two trades, which was the Complete Queen and Country and the Showcase Brave and the Bold.
Is that volume 2 of the Brave and the Bold?
Yes, it was. And that's the Batman team-ups.
Mm-hmm.
And they're probably getting to the point where I probably have a lot of these issues, probably starting with the next one, but I figured, what the hey, go ahead and get it.
Yeah, I skipped that one because I do have all the issues, starting with about issue 90 of Brave and Bold.
So far, the showcases are falling into three categories for me. Ones I know I need, you know, the Wonder Woman, the Elongated Man, stuff like that. Stuff I know I don't need. Suicide Squad, anything from pretty much the late 80s or forward, I've got. And then those that kind of fall into the other category of Jonah Hex, Sergeant Rock, Phantom Stranger, Challengers of the Unknown, stuff that's not core superhero properties. Some of those I'm getting, some of them I'm not, and I need to make a list of what I've got, what I've come out with, and maybe go pick up a couple of more of those. Because, I mean, geez, for the price point, you just can't beat a showcase.
Right.
But I'm just glad I was current on my new comics reading before this shipment came, because, again, my God, it was huge.
Yeah, I'm caught up on Marvel and DC at this point, but I have a lot of indie stuff that I'm behind on the last couple of weeks.
I mean, just out of that shipment, I've read a decent amount, and I've still got 32 comics left to read.
Yeah.
That's a weekly shipment, you know, equivalent right there. It's like, damn. So, and I think we can forego talking about the end of One More Day and just give it kind of a blanket thumbs down and move on.
Yep. I got three Marvel lead figures this week. I got Nova, Captain Britain, and Joe Quesada. Oops, I mean Mephisto.
Yeah.
One and the same to me at this point.
Oh, God, yeah.
And I got two Bowen minibus. I got the Green Hulk and the Julia Carpenter Spider-Woman.
Cool. How is that Nova figures? I recall that one looked amazing.
It's nice. All those are nice, though.
Yeah, yeah.
Even the Quesada one's nice. He's now with my Spider-Man villain, so.
As well he should be.
Yeah.
There are very few things heroes just don't do, and make deals with devils is one of them.
Spider-Devil, he should not be called.
I don't know what they were thinking.
I know what they were thinking.
Yeah. Well, shall we move on to our first actual comic of the week?
Legion of Superheroes, number 37. I know we did the last issue of this when it was Supergirl in the Legion of Superheroes, but the title has sort of changed a little bit in that Supergirl has been taken out of the equation. Seems like they had a little bit of a continuity reset, and Jim Shooter, who started writing Legion of Superheroes when he was like 13 back in 1965, is back in comics and back on his first comics assignment, which is Legion of Superheroes, which is sort of appropriate. You know, he hasn't been in comics in a really long time, and coming back to the team that started it all for him is sort of nice.
Yeah, and I thought this would be a good change of pace to actually do two back-to-back issues, particularly with such a notable change in the creative team. Now, you said you thought there was a bit of a continuity reset here, and I kind of thought it was a reasonably smooth transition in some respects, not so in others. What did you consider kind of that continuity reset?
I don't know, it just, not maybe not a full reset, but it just didn't seem like, it looked like the characters were kind of back to being the kind of the classic Legion characters for the most part. Whereas the previous set of stories, they were sort of modernized versions of some of the characters. And I, certainly we didn't see Colossal Boy, or as he likes to call himself, Micro Lad in this issue. But, you know, I kind of got a classic feel off of a lot of the characters here, but, you know, not surprising given who's writing it. I wouldn't say it's like a full continuity reset. It's just, it's probably more of like just a feeling that I got on reading it.
That I would completely agree with, because particularly with the quote-unquote the bridge and the duty roster and some of that stuff.
And kind of like the monitor duty and just the interplay between the characters, the dialogue, and it's not anything overt that changed. It's just, it felt like I was reading classic Legion.
Exactly.
Much more so than some of the recent stuff.
Yeah, because I thought kind of story continuity-wise and stuff, it was a fairly smooth transition, but I have to agree entirely. There was something about the storytelling that really harkened back to the classic Legion, you know, where you've got this bigger ensemble cast, a lot of them getting used. You've got everything from the duty roster to the way they use the flight rings for kind of recording mission logs and things of that nature, which are all, you know, very subtle kind of things, but gave it a bit of a different feeling. And, you know, I don't know if Jim Shooter had been reading the book over the years or not, but I certainly got the impression from this issue that if he hadn't, the editor did an astounding job, because it sure felt like a smooth kind of transition and not a, I mean, it could have easily been Jim Shooter comes on, had been displeased with what had happened, and just does a clean, this is now a new start, number one, effectively, and move on. And I didn't think that happened.
Yeah, you're right on that. I look forward to, like, you didn't, any book like this, you're not going to see every character in any given issue. There's just too darn many Legionnaires. So I look forward to seeing, you know, like, how he writes Brainiac 5, how he writes just some of the other characters that have been in here lately. You know, when Cosmic Boy shows up again from wherever he's, you know, sort of out to. And I'm really curious on the Colossal Boy thing and
yeah,
Shrinking Violet and, you know, some of those characters.
Those are some of the ones that had kind of the biggest personality resets with this reboot of the Legion. A lot of, I mean, Lightning Lad is Lightning Lad is Lightning Lad. Or is Livewire is Lightning Lad, you know, whatever.
And that's the other thing. It's like he's Lightning Lad again. He's not Livewire. And that, I always hated that Livewire business.
Yeah, but that was one of the things Mark Waid did when he restarted this, which I felt was a good move.
Yeah.
I had been a little afraid that we were going to get something that was a fairly clean break from the previous issue. And I'm glad we did not. And I really like some of the stuff he's doing, like with Princess Projectra and some aspects like that. It's clear Jim Shooter has a definite knowledge of the characters, a respect for them, and, you know, I feel this artist is a good match for him. It's a nice kind of clean style that plays well with the story.
Yeah, Francis Manipul and Livesey as the inker. Is that Ryan Livesey? He's going by a single name now. I don't know where that affectation came from.
Yeah. I mean, I'm a longtime Legion fan, and, you know, I've been liking it recently overall, but this I thought was a very solid start to a new run by a new creative team.
Right. So Jim Shooter certainly has not lost it. You know, he's been out of comics for a while now, but this is a really good comic, and it's a good jumping on point for someone that hasn't picked it up in a long time.
Yeah. I mean, I will admit, I'm a little surprised that, you know, he got back on Legion. Less so from, you know, him being, you know, maybe wanting to get back on. That makes perfect sense. But, you know, I'm a little surprised just with some of the politics over at DC. Because Jim Shooter's been around long enough to rub a couple of people the wrong way.
Yeah. What did you think of the two covers?
I got both. I mean, DCBS had these 74 cents a shot, so why not? Overall, I liked them. The Colossal Boy, there's something about his proportions and so forth that just don't work for me.
It's the neck.
Yeah.
The shoulders leading up to the neck. Something funny.
That's a lot of it. You're right. It's like his head isn't colossal size.
Yeah. But I'm looking forward to seeing, now I'm looking at the covers, you know, it's like what characters I want to see how he handles, and it's like Chameleon Boy, I want to see Brainiac, as I said before. I'd really like to see Sun Boy. Ultra Boy, Shadow Lass.
Yeah.
They have Phantom Girl's costume different on the cover versus in the comic.
Did they?
She's got the Power Girl cutout on her chest on the cover.
Well, she's got...
And that's solid black, kind of covering her up on the inside.
And she's got black gloves on the inside. And
right. The
cutout around the elbows and the arm and stuff is not there inside. Interesting.
Yeah,
good catch.
There's a cutout on the shoulder is still there.
Yeah. Now, who's the guy in the green next to Light Lass? I'm having a hard time figuring that one out.
I don't know who that is.
I feel better then. Thank you. I was going to say, if it was something that's blatantly obvious, like, oh, man.
No, I don't know who that is.
But certainly Chameleon Boy looks very interesting. That's one that's got a lot of potential.
Yeah. I like how they drew the bottom of him. It's kind of like some kind of octopus or something like that.
Yeah. What I like about this is, particularly with the costume designs, there's a nice blend of different eras of the Legion. Because Triplicate Girl has kind of the Legionnaires era look to her costume, where it's got kind of that center stripe and the other two sides or whatever, which fits her character. But a lot of them went with that kind of a look. Whereas Phantom Girl, Saturn Girl have kind of that late 70s Cockrum style to their costume. I think you hit a couple of different classic eras of the Legion with the costume takes they chose. Definitely looking forward to the next issue. I think this series has a lot of potential.
I'll move on to Ultimate Power number 9.
Yeah, this one has been having problems coming out over time. It seems to go for a few months between. And frankly, I kind of sort of lost track of where it had left off. And they could have done a much better job on that opening splash page, resetting the scene with the two Squadron Supremes being there. Overall, I enjoyed the story. I thought it was good. I didn't think it was brilliant, but there were some nice twists to it, and it was entertaining, which, you know, is about all I can ask for.
It was okay. I liked running up, and it's been maybe a couple of months since the last issue came out. Maybe only a month, I'm not sure. I kind of, like, lost track of the story along the way a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
It lost a little bit of momentum. They're going to have a trade of this come out. I think they've already solicited the hardcover for it, so the trade should be getting solicited any time. I think it would read relatively well in one go if you got it, you know, in a trade form.
Yeah.
The problems that I have with it are probably more from just losing momentum in the story because of the delays from issue to issue and having to get back into the story.
Well, and particularly at this point where you've got the entire roster of the Ultimates, the Ultimate Fantastic Four, the Supreme Power Squadron Supreme, the more classic Squadron Supreme. I mean, that's a few dozen characters right there.
And you got Wolverine running around for good measure.
Yeah, I guess they had a couple of the Ultimate X-Men, too. I forgot about that.
Yeah, just, you know, hey, what the hell? You know, let's bring some X-Men along. They got Storm. They got Wolverine. You know, they're popular characters. Let's put them in, too.
Yeah.
Spider-Man's in here, right? So, you know, you got a lot of characters. I see Cyclops is there, too. So I guess, yeah. There's quite a few characters.
Well, and again, they were never really clearly established who all was where and stuff at the beginning of this issue. And I think if you just read the previous one, wouldn't be a problem. But that's one of the things that delays can really do to story momentum. And there was something about the fight between the Ultimate Thing and the Ultimate Hulk that started out really good, ended, I thought, kind of anticlimactically. It's like, that's it? That's the extent of the fight?
Yeah.
I'm at the point where, depending when, what, and if they solicit another thing in the Supreme Power universe, I don't know if I'm going to keep going on that universe or not. I had decided, gosh, was it a year and a half ago when this thing started, that this was going to be kind of a litmus test for that universe. And they're doing halfway interesting stuff when they do anything with it, but they've so let that universe kind of, you know, fade away that I question if there's any point to sticking with it if they ever publish anything more with it. But, I mean, I enjoyed the Ultimate half of this more than the Supreme Power half of it. But overall, it was a fun series. It was a good series. Greg Land and the art doing some good stuff.
Yeah, I guess I can sum up my feeling on the misstep now that I'm thinking about it a little bit is bringing the regular Squadron Supreme into it was probably what made it more, I don't think it was necessary. It didn't seem to add a whole lot to any kind of resolution point, and it just added so many characters that it just made it confusing. I mean, having the Ultimates and the Supreme Power Squadron Supreme was plenty fine, you know, and then sucking that other universe worth the characters in just kind of muddied the waters.
I agree with that. I think it could have been a really cool story if they'd had a little more space to play with and actually used those other characters well.
Yeah, well, if they would have brought them in at issue 5 instead of at issue 8 or something. Did they bring them in last issue? Or
I think last issue, yeah.
Yeah, so I mean, there just wasn't time enough to do anything with them then to make it just be window dressing.
Yeah, and really, I thought the only one that got used well was the Skrull.
Yeah.
And I don't know that he ever actually gets named in this issue.
I don't think so. Unless you know that's Skymax. And then, like, you know, it's like, well, which is my point, right? You bring in those characters and you don't do a whole lot with them.
Yeah.
So unless somebody's already familiar with regular Marvel U, Squadron Supreme, from which even them, they're from some counter-Earth or other dimension or something anyway. So just anyone who complains about the 52 Earths at DC, at least there's some form of structure to it. You know, Marvel's got Earths coming out of their ears. Move on to Proof from Image.
That works. Now, I had gotten a little behind, so I read both issues 2 and 3, although what we're really going to talk about here is issue 3. And this is a series that I started picking up because you recommended, Bob. And as I said before, with after I'd read the first issue, I'll say it again here. I'm really enjoying this. This is a cool series. The art style is one that if it were to show up on a mainstream superhero book, I'd probably be kind of upset. But it is perfect for this series. And I can't imagine the series having any other artist at this point. This has a Men in Black kind of a feel to it, and in place of aliens, you've got supernatural stuff. And in place of Tommy Lee Jones, you've got Bigfoot.
That's right.
This is just...
It's fun.
Yeah.
It's a fun series. You know, it's got the kind of darker elements to it, certainly, but it's just interesting. I love these little cryptoids they drop in throughout the text.
Yes. And my favorite one of those actually was in the second issue, and it was near the end of the first part of the story, which is not Proof's story, but shoot, what's her name?
Ginger.
Ginger's story. And it's basically after Proof has told her, hey, the helicopter's about to leave, I hope you're ready. And the little quote was, the single biggest problem in communication is the illusion that it has taken place, by George Bernard Shaw. It's like, okay, that's just funny, and really fit the moment. And most of these things, when they toss those in, are, I almost want to say, like, DVD commentary type extras that really add to the story. Do they have to be there to understand the story? No, you could probably skip most of them.
I find it interesting, you know, like the lady clutches her chest like she's having a heart attack. Cryptoid. Although nitroglycerin acts as a vasodilator, increasing blood flow to the heart and easing chest pain associated with heart disease, it does not prevent heart attacks. You know, because she has her nitroglycerin tablets, and it's like, well, you know, if you're going to have a heart attack, you're going to have a heart attack.
Yeah. But, I mean, that's one that if you'd skipped it, you'd still follow the story, but you do miss something extra. And I think those things are so well used. And we've seen other places, again, like Adam, where it's just, why did they bother to do this? This takes me out of the story. These here completely add to it and give it another level, which I love.
Yeah, and it's maybe on the Atom, it's just that, you know, I'm not smart enough to figure out how that bizarre quote they're pulling from somewhere is pertaining to anything. It just seems like it's some random quote, and I'm not smart enough to figure it out. Here, you know, they put the thing in, and it's like kind of directly adding to and applicable to the point of the story that they're on right now. I don't have to be a professor at Harvard to figure out what the heck they're trying to get to.
They tend to be things that never would have occurred to me to toss in there, but once they're there, it's like, oh yeah, that fits perfectly. You know, again, like the nitroglycerin thing, you know, it's like, oh, well, that's a nice little, you know, cool tidbit, adds to the story, but it's like, you know.
He steps on the bones in the cave.
Yeah.
In Cryptoid, it can take as much as 200 pounds per square inch of pressure to crush the skull of a healthy adult human. It's like, okay. Tells you something about the force of Proof just walking around.
Yeah. I mean, all in all, this is a really well-done series, and one of the things that's kind of unique about it is the two leads, Proof and Ginger, each kind of have their own story going on. And in previous ones, she had kind of the front part of the book, he had kind of the back part of the book, and there were definite intersections in the story. Here, they're very much going in parallel and kind of cutting between the two. And I like that there's kind of those two independent and interdependent threads going on in the story. You know, it gives it a bit of a unique feel and really works. And then with this one, they had kind of not one, but two backup stories. One was kind of going into the origin of the cryptoid or whatever they're trying to hunt down. And then one kind of after the text pages, which I almost missed, doing some foreshadowing. And there was a kind of a subtle sense of humor about that story, you know, where the title of the thing is foreshadowing. It's like, okay, you know, let's be kind of straightforward with what we're doing here. But it was cool for them to do that.
Yes.
And man, the text pages here go on for, you know, what, 4, 5, 6 pages?
Well, yeah, there's kind of a reproduced newspaper thing, which they say is an actual real newspaper thing later on. There's other stuff that are culled from various newspapers and magazines about, you know, UFO, Bigfoot, other kind of sightings of these things, since that's sort of the basic premise of the series. And then just some other cool things. You see some, like, sketch pages, you know, where they show various stages of art being completed. Pretty nice content. And then, you know, you got that extra 3-page foreshadowing story.
Yeah.
You really get a lot of content in here. It's worth, to me, it's really worth the money because it takes me twice as long to get through an issue of this as it takes to get through most other $2.99 comics that I read.
Well, even though this is an image book, everything in here is proof. There is not a house ad. There's not a wasted page.
Yeah.
And I don't know how they swung that, but man, I totally appreciate it. I mean, that right there is the 8 to 12 extra pages of material we're getting. And they do a really good job on the inside front cover of kind of getting you up to speed.
Yes.
And I love the last paragraph on this one in issue 3 of, pretty soon we're going to run out of room trying to explain everything here. Try not to come late to the party next time, okay? It's not as much fun without you. It's like, okay, that's just kind of funny.
So let's just give the what's been going on here. So FBI agent Ginger Brown was recruited by the Lodge, a joint effort of the United States and Canadian governments to track down and contain the most unusual of endangered animal species, cryptids. A cryptid is a creature that has been witnessed and for which some evidence, such as blurry photographs or footprints, may exist, but the creature itself has never been captured or officially documented. Ginger's new partner, a gentle, sophisticated, intellectual guy who just happens to be a Bigfoot, goes by the name John Proof Proofrock. So, I mean, that's the basic general thing. You got this FBI agent, Ginger, and her partner's a Bigfoot, and they're hunting down and trying to find other cryptoids or cryptids, and that's it. And it's kind of like, you know, X-Files, Men in Black, you know, kind of buddy, you know, thing with mysteries, and it's just fun.
Yeah, this is definitely one I recommend, and I'm glad you recommended it to me, Bob.
So our last book today is Justice for Hire #1. I think the first thing that Creative Impulse Entertainment has put out.
I believe so, yeah.
And nice package. Came with a DVD, about 10-15 minute DVD with some pretty decent martial arts action going on in it. Wasn't a lot of story to it, just some fight scenes hooked together. I actually watched the DVD before I read the comic. I wish I would have done it in the other order. I would have probably known who, you know, the characters are, you know, because you had the older Ebony and Ivory, you had the younger Ebony and Ivory, you had some of the other kind of characters in the film who, when I just watched it first, I didn't really know who they were.
I actually read the comic first and then watched the DVD, and even though the DVD clearly has in the title sequences who everybody is, that part flashes on the screen so fast that it wasn't until after I'd watched everything with the fight scenes and watched that sequence with the titles a few more times that it's like, oh, that was the older Ebony and Ivory. That's the, you know. I also didn't like how they intercut between the various fight scenes, because as it was, while I enjoyed the fight choreography and stuff like that, and it had a definite Hong Kong film feel to it, it lacked storyline, and it was an excerpt from stuff they'd done a few years back, and It kind of lacked the context. If they'd simply gotten it to where I had a menu to pick from of, oh, I want to watch the fight scene with the original Ebony and Ivory, I would have at least known who the heroes were going into that fight scene. Because frankly, I thought the original Ebony and Ivory, the two older guys in the thing, were like guards at some mansion or something. So I had kind of expected them to lose the fight.
Yeah, there wasn't a lot of context to it. And I think they're just like throwing out some various extra scene, you know, so you can see the fighting and things. I don't know that it was intended to have any particular storyline.
No, I don't think it was. It was stuff they had that they thought would be a cool thing to include with the comic, but not part and parcel of the comic.
I think the one thing they could have done is what you just said. You know, if they would have just had a menu with the names of the different fight scenes, and then you could either pick one of the fight scenes or play all, and then it would just play them kind of in order.
Yeah.
That would have probably made it several times better.
But the constant intercutting between the fight scenes
was
a little confusing.
Fight choreography itself was pretty darn good, though.
Yeah, it was.
Those guys were definitely the people that they had. I mean, I am kind of looking forward. They're going to make a movie. I read the back matter in this issue, and the guy who's doing this, Jan Lucanus or Lucanus, you know, he just graduated from New York Film School, and, you know, they're going to make a movie, and they've gotten some awards for, you know, fight choreography and things like this, and some awards from martial arts magazines and things like that, which I can sort of tell from seeing those things. They did a pretty good job of that. So I'd actually be interested in when they actually come out with a movie that would, you know, theoretically then have the storyline and the continuity and all that kind of stuff, and not just be the disjointed scenes. You know, I'd be very interested to see something like that.
Yeah, same here. I really think these guys, if they had come out 10 years ago, would have been a surefire syndicated TV show hit, because they can do the fight choreography, the actual stuff on the DVD. While I think the packaging could have been better, the content was excellent. It stands up next to the various Hong Kong films I've seen and stuff like that. So they've got, on both the fight choreography side, on the filming side, and the way they edit the fight together and stuff, they know what they're doing. They're doing a great job there. And going actually into the comic now, the basic premise for the series is the government passes the Retribution Act, allowing private counter-terrorist security forces to thrive. In other words, if somebody does you wrong, you can hire somebody for retribution. And I'm like, what a simple concept. That's absolutely brilliant. And imagine if this and these guys doing the fight choreography and the whole package had been around back when syndicated hour-long action and adventure TV shows were thriving, like Hercules and Xena and those kinds of things. These guys probably could have put together a hour-long, you know, TV show for a season that would have been just outstanding action sequences and a decent story. Because I thought the story in the comic was a lot of fun. It was a very simple, interesting idea, and reasonably well executed. The art, to me, is kind of standard indie art of this kind of an action-adventure type thing.
It's good journeyman art. It's not what I would call excellent art, but it doesn't detract from the story.
Yeah.
It moves the story along. It does its job. It's okay.
It's one of those where the overall flow is what works. Any individual panel, you could probably rip apart. But taken in whole, it works well, it tells the story, and it's effective.
It's the exact opposite of the long count that we talked about last week. Whereas on that one, any individual panel I looked at was beautiful, but it couldn't tell a story for beans. You know, this one, it's like the story flows pretty nicely, but, you know, taken in and of itself, any given panel's like, you know, average.
Yeah, and certainly it's not bad art. And the one thing that the art really has going for it is it does a good job on the fight scenes and the choreography on some of that stuff, which is really what a lot of this is about.
There's a lot of ideas being thrown out in this issue. It's pretty jam-packed with stuff.
Yeah.
I mean, you're getting the introduction of a lot of different characters. You're getting a lot of different concepts. And it set itself up so that I'm looking forward to getting more issues, because I want to see where they go with some of this stuff. You know, they've now introduced, you know, several different competing organizations. You know, the Hired Muscle, the Rough Diamond, the Boomerang Boys, whoever these the very cliffhanger page. What do they call themselves? The Asela fight team. You know, you have the Justice for Hire guys, and they've got their big office where they've got, you know, the weapons testing lab and the guy with the armor and the flexible fight armor he's putting together. And you have the different, you know, the dojo in there and the conference rooms. You know, this looks like it's like kind of a flying car or something. I know this car like crashed into the side of a building. So I don't know if they like tossed it off of a helicopter or if they actually have flying cars in this universe, but
I kind of thought they had gone on a parking garage across the street.
Oh, could be. That wasn't particularly clear.
Agreed.
Oh yeah, I see it on this page. It's kind of like shooting off the one building. You can kind of see it in front of the moon on page like 4.
Yeah, it's going from the roof of the building across the street or something.
Yeah, I kind of missed that on the first read through.
Yeah. There's a ton of cool ideas in this that are being introduced and established. And it looks like a very rich narrative universe and one I'm looking forward to seeing more of.
Yeah, I liked, even though it was kind of a talking head page, the center spread with the two news people kind of debating about Ebony and Ivory, how they were doing it. I think it was an effective way of introducing the two sides of the issue in this world.
Yeah.
And what the differing opinions are. And then they just have the talking heads running down the sides, and they've got some various action establishing kind of art kind of in the middle, which makes it not as static, which I thought that was actually relatively effective.
And I liked how they stacked vertically the talking heads. So you just read the word balloons going down.
Yep.
You know, it was a nice simple thing. And again, it was good use of the splash in the middle, just various things, as if they were cutting to this during the TV interview or discussion.
Right.
I mean, all in all, I really liked it. I think the artist hopefully will get a little better over time, just kind of tighten up the pencils, get a little more experience, get comfortable with it, whatever. It's fine art, it's decent art, it's effective, but, you know, it's no George Perez.
Right. But, you know, I think that there's certainly a place for this, and I've got this on my regular pull list. So I'm looking forward to it, and it's like apparently they're supposed to be the little DVD included for a while. This DVD here says number 1 of 12. So I think it's a pretty fair deal. You get a decent sized comic, which in and of itself, you know, there are other companies that sell a comic like this for $3.99, and you get this 10 or 15 minute DVD along with it. It's a nice package.
Yeah. I mean, the DVD certainly pushes it over the top, but I also felt there was more story content in this than in a lot of other comics. So between the two, definitely recommended. If you see it at your local shop, check it out, flip through it, see if you like it. If you like Hong Kong action adventure stuff, by all means, pick this up.
And it's also, if you want to check it out, you can go on the web. It's www.justice-for-hire.com. So it's justice-for-hire with dashes between the words .com. And you can check the basic thing out there also. So I thought they did a nice job on this. I'm looking forward to seeing more.
Yeah.
Join us next week when we discuss Teen Titans Year One, Number One from DC, Thunderbolts Number 118 from Marvel, and The End League Number One from Dark Horse Comics.
The show notes and forum for this podcast can be found at www.comicbookpage.com under the podcast and forum sections of the website. Please email us at theguys@comicbookpage.com and let us know what you think of what was discussed in this episode. Thanks for listening.